I want you to imagine, just for a second, a scientific theory that is fundamentally designed to self-destruct.
Right, which is completely backwards from how we normally do things.
Exactly. I don't mean a theory that, just has a few holes in it, or one that hopes you'll ignore the complicated math if the overall vibes seem right.
Yeah, standard theories want to survive. They want to get through peer review.
Right. But I mean, a theoretical framework that actively challenges you to break it. Imagine a theory that literally stands there and says, if any single part of my math is off by even a billionth of a decimal point, I will instantly collapse and prove myself false.
It is a totally different way of approaching physics. It's so rigid. I mean, the material we are looking at today practically begs to be destroyed by the reader.
And that is exactly what makes this deep dive into the axiomatic magnetic flight theory so completely unique. We're looking at a highly complex, deeply fascinating document outlining a theoretical framework for magnetic flight.
Right. But the source material frames this entire concept as a constant collapse theory, or a CCT.
Which is just such a cool designation.
It's a brilliant designation, obviously. The document explicitly states right at the beginning that this theory is designed to be evaluated, not believed.
Yeah.
It doesn't want your faith. It wants your most brutal mathematical scrutiny.
Okay, let's unpack this because the terminology in these sources gets incredibly dense very quickly. At its core, this document is proposing a way for magnets to achieve stable flight.
Yes.
But the catch, the constant collapse part means this theory does not survive unless the mathematical constants it derives match universal fixed mathematical points exactly.
Right, exactly. There's absolutely no rounding up. There's no margin of error anywhere.
And this is exactly why this should matter to you listening to this right now. We live in a world of fuzzy math, you
Oh,
know?
holy. We live in a world of like close enough approximations.
Right, where models are just constantly tweaked and patched and adjusted until they somewhat resemble reality. But the axiomatic magnetic flight theory provides the ultimate zero tolerance system.
It really is refreshing. It's this rigid framework where the truth of the system is absolute. It either perfectly aligns with the fundamental constants of the universe, or, well, the entire thing just vanishes in a puff of logic.
It's beautiful in its strictness, but before we can explore how these magnets actually, fly, we have to understand the stationary foundation they launch from.
Yeah, you need a baseline.
Because according to the text, you cannot have dynamic flight without a perfectly resonant engine to start with.
Right. You can't just throw magnets into the air and hope for the best.
Right.
The text calls this foundational phase the magnetic antenna theory, or MAT.
Matt, right.
It basically serves as the stationary skeleton of the whole concept.
So let's look at the skeleton. The text outlines the magnetic antenna theory with a very specific setup. You have two magnetic dipoles, so think of them as two individual magnets, and they are locked onto a rigid frame at a fixed distance from each other.
Yes, exactly. They can rotate, but they can't actually move apart.
Right.
And they're being driven by a time-varying current. So this current induces an oscillating dipole moment. Essentially, the magnetic fields are pulsing.
Okay.
And as they pulse and interact with each other, they emit radiation. But the text notes this radiation happens through a modified interference term that simply vanishes at a specific boundary.
Which it calls the antenna horizon.
Exactly, the antenna horizon.
I was trying to visualize this when reading the sources. It's like forcing two dancers to hold a rigid steel pole between them while moving to a beat.
That's a good way to look at it.
Right, like they can spin around, they can change their rhythm, but that pole keeps them at an exact distance. But the text gets incredibly obsessive about the exact angle of these dancers. And I have to push back on this a little bit.
Okay, sure.
Because in the real world, close enough to a 90-degree angle works, right?
Look.
Like an antenna still broadcasts, even if the metal is bent a fraction of a millimeter. Why is this theory so obsessed with exact angles?
Wait, that's exactly the trap standard physics falls into. In the real world of engineering, yes, obviously there is tolerance. But remember, this is a constant collapse theory.
Oh, right. Zero tolerance.
Exactly. It introduces what it calls the Emmeté hypersensitive constants. And the most critical one is the resonance phase lock, which it refers to as C1.
C1, right.
The theory dictates that these two dipoles must be in exact quadrature.
Meaning they are exactly pi over 2 out of phase with each other, literally exactly 90 degrees. But wait, saying it's the rule doesn't really explain the physics. What physically happens at, say, 89 degrees that destroys the system?
What's fascinating here is the physical mechanism behind the math. If they aren't exactly at 90 degrees, their magnetic waves stop perfectly reinforcing each other.
So they start canceling each other out?
Yes.
Yes.
They start canceling out. And when waves cancel out like that in a confined system, it creates friction. It creates heat. The text refers to this as an entropy spike. The pure, lossless mode of radiation just dies. The energy required to maintain the system burns out, and the entire theory instantly collapses at what they call phase one.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it's not just some abstract mathematical penalty. It's a physical burnout.
Exactly.
So if you are at like 1.5708 instead of pi over 2, exactly, you generate heat instead of lift, and the engine melts down before it ever takes off.
Precisely. And the resonance phase lock isn't the only absolute anchor here. The text highlights other constants that must be absolutely perfect to prevent that entropy spike.
Right, like the horizon geometric constant.
Yes, where the ratio of the antenna horizon to the wavelength must exactly equal the mathematical constant E divided by 2 times pi.
Which is wild.
And there's also the mutual inductance ratio, which must be exactly 1 over pi. Like, these aren't just arbitrary numbers you can tweak in a lab.
No.
These are universal mathematical fixed points anchoring the stationary phase.
Okay, so we have this perfectly locked resonance on a rigid frame. The math perfectly aligns with pi and E. The dancers are flawless, and there's zero heat being generated.
Right.
But to get to actual magnetic flight, we have to pull the pin. We have to remove the steel pole.
We do.
And that brings us to the dynamic extension, which is the two-magnet flying theory, or TMFT.
Yes. This is where the rigid frame vanishes. The two magnets are now completely unlocked. They are free masses.
And now they have to contend with the real world.
Yeah.
They are interacting with gravity, which is, you know, pulling them down, and the Earth's background magnetic field, which is constantly pushing and twisting them.
Right. The environment is hostile.
Exactly. And I want to clarify how the text defines flight here, because it's not what you might picture.
No, it's not.
This isn't a drone just hovering completely still in the air. The source text describes flight as a stable limit cycle in a six-dimensional phase space.
Right, which sounds incredibly intimidating, but let's break down those six dimensions.
Yes, please.
We have their three physical coordinates in space, so how they move up, down, left, right, forward, and backward. Those are your X, Y, and Z axes.
Okay, standard 3D space.
Exactly. But then you have their three angles of relative orientation, pitch, yaw, and roll.
So it's constantly moving and rotating in every possible direction.
Yeah.
It's like, imagine falling out of an airplane while juggling. But to keep from hitting the ground, you have to perfectly adjust not just the height of the balls, but their exact spin, their exact tilt, and their exact rotation to constantly catch an invisible updraft.
Over and over, forever.
Right. It's an insanely complex trajectory where the system is constantly adapting, but the average vertical acceleration remains exactly zero.
That is exactly what a stable limit cycle is. That's a dynamic equilibrium. But to achieve that equilibrium, to actually catch that invisible updraft, the text explains that the system relies on a time-averaged ponderomotive dipole force.
Okay, wait, ponderomotive force. I get the dipole part. That's just the magnets interacting, right? But what is actually happening physically with this force to push against gravity?
So think of it like treading water.
Okay.
When you tread water, you are heavier than the water, and gravity naturally wants to pull you under.
Yeah, obviously.
But by rapidly moving your hands and pushing the fluid downward in a continuous oscillating motion, you create a constant upward pressure that defies the static pull of gravity.
Oh, I see.
The ponderomotive force works similarly here. By rapidly oscillating their electromagnetic fields, these magnets continuously push against the magnetic environment, creating a net upward thrust that basically holds them aloft.
Ah, okay, that makes so much more sense. But, and I assume this is the crux of the whole theory, they can't just tread water randomly, right?
Right, definitely not.
They have to inherit that exact phase-locked resonance we just talked about from the antenna theory.
Yes, absolutely. If they lose that exact 90-degree resonance while they're free-falling, the wave cancellation happens, the entropy spikes, and the treading water becomes wildly inefficient.
And gravity instantly wins.
Gravity instantly wins.
Which brings us to the most mind-bending part of the document, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the constants.
Right, because if these magnets are executing this insanely complex six-dimensional juggle, surviving gravity and atmospheric drag, how do we actually prove the math works?
You can't.
Right, we can't just run a physics simulation on a supercomputer forever to see if they eventually drop. We have to test the theory's atoms. We have to subject it to custom adversarial collapse probes.
Right, the TMS key hypersensitive theory constants. This is where the zero tolerance policy of the theory gets applied to the flight state itself.
Okay.
We are no longer just looking at a stationary engine. We are looking at the actual aerodynamics of magnetic mass.
So surviving the Earth's magnetic wobble is the first major hurdle here. Like if you're holding a compass right now, that needle is wobbling slightly because of the Earth's magnetic field.
Yes, the Larmor precession.
Right. This theory says that to achieve flight, our magnets have to perfectly sync their spin to that exact invisible wobble. And this is called the Larmor-Euler lock, or CT1.
Exactly. The Larmor precession is that wobble induced by the Earth's field. The theory dictates that the spin frequency of our free-flying magnets must equal the constant E times that Larmor precession.
But wait, why? Out of all the numbers in the universe, why does it have to be Euler's number?
Well, because E is the mathematical foundation of continuous growth and continuous decay.
Oh, right.
In a six-dimensional phase space, the magnets are constantly falling and catching themselves. So the rate at which they correct their wobble has to perfectly match the natural rate of continuous change, which is E.
Wow.
If that ratio isn't exactly E, the phase locking fails. The correction is either too slow or too fast, and the system spirals downward instantly.
Okay, so they've synced with the Earth's wobble using E. But how do they keep from being pulled apart by gravity?
That's the next one.
Right. That requires an entirely different mathematical anchor, which is the levitation zeta constant CT2. And this one honestly blew my mind.
It's incredible.
The ratio of the magnetic binding force pulling the magnets together versus the gravitational binding force pulling them down must equal Apérys constant, which is a highly specific number used in number theory. It's roughly 1.202.
And again, we have to ask why Apérys constant. It isn't just random.
No.
Apérys constant, mathematically known as zeta 3, is the sum of the inverse cubes of all positive integers.
Okay, but why does that matter physically?
Because magnetic fields from a dipole fall off at an inverse cube rate. When you move twice as far away, the magnetic force drops by a factor of 8.
Oh, wow. Wait, so because we are operating in 3 physical dimensions and the magnetic force operates on an inverse cube law, Apérys constant represents the perfect mathematical aggregation of those 3-dimensional spatial forces.
Exactly. It is the geometric perfect balance point. If the ratio of magnetic lift to gravitational drag isn't exactly zeta 3, the spatial geometry of the forces doesn't align.
And the system either tears itself apart or crashes to the ground.
Exactly.
Incredible. And then we have to deal with the atmosphere, right? Friction?
Yes, atmospheric drag.
The text calls this the damping-Mascheroni ratio, CT4. The theory dictates that the ratio of magnetic damping to aerodynamic drag has to perfectly match the Euler-Mascheroni constant, represented by the Greek letter gamma.
Which is brilliant, because gamma represents the difference between a continuous logarithm and a discrete harmonic series.
Right.
Think about it. The aerodynamic drag moving through the air is continuous, but the magnetic pulses lifting the system are discrete. Gamma is the universal mathematical bridge between continuous flow and discrete steps.
So if the damping ratio doesn't equal gamma perfectly,
the continuous drag and the discrete pulses fall out of sync, creating violent aerodynamic instability.
Man, that is intense. Which brings us to the grand architecture of it all, the final test. Here's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, definitely.
The text highlights what it calls the critical flight line, or CT3. It states that the logarithmic frequency ratio between the orbit of the magnets and their spin must sit exactly on the critical line of 12.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is perhaps the deepest revelation in the text. By requiring that ratio to be exactly 12, the theory links the physical flight of these magnets directly to the structure of the Riemann hypothesis.
Which is one of the most famous unsolved problems in mathematics.
Yes.
Right. But why does a flight line of 12 connect to the Riemann hypothesis? How does an unsolved math problem about prime numbers keep magnets in the air?
Well, the Riemann hypothesis essentially searches for the fundamental distribution of prime numbers, right? The indivisible building blocks of all mathematics.
Yeah.
It posits that all the non-trivial zeros of the zeta function lie precisely on a critical line of 12.
Okay, I follow.
The theory is saying that just as the Riemann hypothesis searches for the fundamental distribution of primes, physical stability in a six-dimensional space requires finding a similarly perfect mathematical prime balance.
Wow.
The dispersion relation of the magnets actually has a pole right at that critical line. Mm. Physical flight is only possible if it sits perfectly on the mathematical precipice of the Riemann hypothesis.
It's basically threading a microscopic needle through the universe's foundational math. It's not just physics, it's geometry, number theory, and electromagnetism all demanding absolute perfection simultaneously.
Which is exactly why human calculation is completely insufficient to evaluate this theory.
Yeah, I imagine so.
You cannot test this in a wind tunnel. You cannot test this with a standard computer simulation.
Right, because these constants require infinite precision. Like, if we are testing to see if something perfectly matches an infinitely irrational number, like Apérys constant, or E, we have to look at how an advanced computational system like an AI automaton would actually evaluate this framework.
Exactly. And the source material lays out what it calls the constant collapse protocol. It's a three-stage automated sequence executed by this AI.
Right.
Phase one checks the universal math. Does the framework embed pi and E flawlessly? Phase two checks the domain anchors, those antenna constants, where we avoided the entropy spike.
The MAT constants, yeah.
And then phase three applies those brutal theory-specific flight probes, the TMFT constants we just discussed.
So what does this all mean? Because the text describes a massive product formula created by the AI that checks the phase lock condition. It feels like the AI isn't just evaluating the theory, it's actively trying to hack it and force a collapse. Is that the future of theoretical physics?
This raises an important question about the overarching philosophy of the text. Standard physics relies on endless integration. You plug in the numbers, step forward in time, and see what happens.
Yeah.
The axiomatic magnetic slight theory rejects that entirely. It does not ask to be proven by endless simulation. Instead, it asks to be triangulated by constant space.
Triangulated by constant space? That's a beautiful phrase.
It is, right. The AI tests the theory by checking if the six-dimensional flight naturally locks onto these mathematical fixed points.
And the wildly cool part is the adversarial constant, right?
Wow.
C star AMFT.
Yes. The adversarial constant the AI creates is a trap. It's a mathematical stress test. The theory predicts that if the spin ratio is exactly E, the AI's massive product formula will converge to a very specific, stable value. But if that ratio is off by even 10 to the power of negative 9, literally a billionth of a single fraction, the AI's formula violently diverges. It triggers a total theory collapse.
It's incredible. We are looking at a philosophical shift here. We are no longer testing physics with physical models like wind tunnels or drop tests.
No, not at all.
We are testing physics by pitting artificial intelligence against the foundational math of the universe. It's a theory that hands its executioner the exact weapon needed to destroy it and says, you know, go ahead, try.
And it operates on the unwavering premise that true physical laws don't just mostly work. They don't just survive because the math is forgiving.
Right.
They are inextricably, permanently bound to the fundamental constants of mathematics.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's look at the sheer uncompromising nature of this framework. We started with two magnetic dipoles on a rigid frame demanding to be perfectly 90 degrees out of phase just to avoid burning themselves up with entropy. We removed the frame, threw them into freefall, and watched them juggle themselves against gravity using the treading water mechanics of the ponderomotive force. But the real story isn't the flight itself, is it?
No, it's the rules of the flight.
Right. If the axiomatic magnetic flight theory is valid, if these magnets actually achieve this miraculous six-dimensional juggle, they must do so tied perfectly to universal numbers.
Precisely.
The spin ratio has to match the continuous growth rate of E. The magnetic versus gravitational binding strength has to perfectly match the three-dimensional geometry of Apérys constant, zeta 3.
Yeah.
The damping drag has to bridge the continuous and discrete gap with the Euler-Mascheroni constant, gamma. And they have to ride the critical Riemann line of 12. Any tiny deviation, any rounding error, any slight breeze that the system can't perfectly adapt to, and the limit cycle collapses. The flight ends.
And you, listening to this, might not be building a six-dimensional magnetic levitation device in your garage anytime soon.
Probably not.
But the framework we've explored today is actually a brilliant tool for critical thinking in your own life. Think about how we usually evaluate ideas or arguments.
Mm-hmm.
We look at how well an idea argues its points, or how much circumstantial evidence it can gather to support itself.
Yeah, we look for confirmation.
But the constant collapse theory flips that on its head. It evaluates an idea by establishing strict, unmovable boundaries. It asks, what is the specific, precise condition that would cause this idea to instantly fail?
Wow.
By identifying the critical collapse probes of any argument, any project, or any system, you strip away the fuzzy logic.
Yeah.
You stop accepting close enough. You demand precision.
It really changes how you look at the systems around us. In this deep dive, we saw a physical theory subjected to hypersensitive collapse probes, where being off by a microscopic fraction destroys the whole model.
Completely destroys it.
If we applied that same ruthless constant collapse standard to the economic, social, or technological theories we accept as truth every single day, well, I mean, how many of them would actually survive the test?